It's a beautiful day and a fine time for healing. Podcast host Randy Fine, a narcissistic abuse expert and the author of the groundbreaking book Close Encounters of the Worst Kind and the captivating memoir Cliff Edge Road, invites you into her sanctuary, a place where your physical, emotional, and spiritual well-being are all that matter. So put your feet up, relax, and enjoy today's show. And now, here's Randy.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. I am your show host, Randy Fine. My throat is a little hoarse today, and I have some congestion. So you may hear a couple of times of throat clearing, but I'm going to do my best to be clear and sound as good as I always sound for you, for my listeners. So the question of today is it possible to live forever? Is immortality within reach of science and scientific breakthroughs? In today's special guest, world-class scientist Dr. Muju Shi's book, How to Rejuvenate and Live 300 Years and Beyond, he discloses philosophical discourse, his systematic blueprint for living beyond today's human lifespan, illustrating the great potential of state-of-the-art technologies from an insider's perspective. Dr. Shi evaluates current technologies to select essential tools for such a grand goal and offers a unique view of trendy dietary supplements, longevity pills, and other biotechnologies. And most importantly, he answers some of the essential questions about life and death that everyone is curious about. Dr. Muju Shi is a world-class scientist with ample experience in different branches of life sciences. During his extensive career, he has been studying the mechanisms of life, and Dr. Shi is now co-founding a biotechnology company with several other world-renowned scientists. He lives in Durham, North Carolina. Good morning, Muju, Dr. Shi, and welcome.
Good morning, Randy. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you. How are you?
Pretty good. Thanks for having me.
Okay. And today, you know, we're going to be talking about this concept of how to rejuvenate and live 300 years and beyond, and your book, which is same name. So tell us a little bit about your background and how this became of interest to you.
Yeah, sure. So the idea of this book actually starts like 10 years ago. So when I was like working for my PhD in one of the top medical schools, at that time I met like my working partner who had developed a new like gene delivery tool. So that we were fascinated by the efficacy and the like what can be done by this like gene delivery system. So we're thinking about like, you know, ways to like improve human life with it. And like we were thinking about like many others who like funding startups from medical schools were thinking about like diseases to cure. But at that time that, you know, like when gene therapies or gene delivery is not that like popular, think about like the bigger picture. So we're thinking about bigger disease, like what's the most difficult disease that like will ultimately and officially kill everyone? And the answer is aging, and which will ultimately lead to death. So we're thinking about like whether we can use like gene delivery or gene therapy to, you know, cure aging, to cure the disease. So it's all so like that's how the idea starts. And then when we're working on that, we're not only thinking about it as like a commercialized product, we're also thinking about, you know, like we ourselves also want to, you know, like rejuvenate and live longer. So like to really on the idea where I started to look at different research and studies and talk with other KOLs, other like opinion leaders in the field, and listen to what their perspectives are, and also how are their, what are their approaches approaching like longevity. So I mean, based on all those, like, I have like this firm belief that like, you know, it can be done, it can be achieved with the help of technology and science. So with all that, like after years of thinking, and this book comes out.
And you know what's interesting to me as I do this show is I find out how much behind-the-scenes work is done in so many areas, things that we wouldn't even think about. And so this just really, explains this area, that there really are people who are focusing on this kind of, technology or philosophy or whatever it may be. And that is just happening in so many areas. And we are moving forward with technology, so things are changing. You say that we don't rule the body, that we're the humble servants of our DNA. So when you say that, explain that for us, please.
For sure, yes. So actually, it's like, since I have studied the mechanism of life for so long, and through this study that I have worked with different life forms, mammals, bacteria, and plants, and also human beings, right? And the interesting thing or fact about that is all of us are DNA-based life forms, right? Although we have different forms, we have different lifestyles, we have different metabolisms, everything was programmed or it's originated from DNA. And although we are the most intelligent species in the world, I mean, we were way probably much smarter than the other beings on the earth, and we have such a civilization developed based on our brain. But if you look back or look into our roots, we're still our DNA-based life form, and we struggle with the same things like all the other life forms, like survival, right? Since we're talking about rejuvenation and live longer, and that's a big problem for human beings, and also a big problem for other animals or plants. It's a big problem for DNA-based life forms, and it's a struggling of the DNA itself, right? The DNA have formed on these earth for probably 2-3 billion years, and however, it has been struggling to prolong its existence on the earth, right? There are so much extinctions happens, and it's trying to diversify, and evolutionated into different life forms to keep on its existence. So we have all the heritages from our DNA master, from our ancestor, but we have the same problem, that is survival. And why I say that we are a humble servant is that we are ruined by it, right? Our body is not designed to live 300, 500, or indefinitely, right? It has probably a natural lifespan cap there, probably it's around 100, 200 years, right? This is determined already by the DNA. So although we are smart, we are capable, we can do a lot of things, but because it's rooted in our DNA, we have this lifespan. And also, it's not just about how long we can live, it's all about how we can live, right? We like to sleep at night or wake up in the morning. It's determined by our DNA. We grow in our teens and we become mature in our 20s and 30s. It's determined by our DNA. Or fall in love, all those things. Those are signal pathways and determined by ourselves, which also are rooted by our DNA. So that's the reason why I say, although we are smart and capable and we can achieve so many things, but we're still the humble servant
of our DNA. You say countless severe disasters have occurred on this planet in the past 3.8 billion years that have caused many distinctions. There's been 5 major ones that have killed over 70% of all species at that time. Is that going to happen to us?
I mean, it's hard to tell, right? It's hard to predict, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's one thing that's probably is different is that all the past life forms on Earth, they don't have the power of mankind, right? They cannot change the nature at their will. They they just live with it. But human beings, we can do so much more. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to predict, but if there will be an end to humankind, it's either by, you know, I don't know, it could be environmental or it could be like caused by ourselves, like as predicted by some other scientists. So, but I don't know. I mean, it's hard to tell. But I hope it's not our generation or our, like, our children's or grandchildren's generation. I hope that and solve the big problem and they like can sustain in other forms, right? Since like human beings have been live on the earth only for like half a million to a million years. It sounds like a long time, but like compared to the history of Earth, it's just a blink. And like look at like how long can Earth live? This I still have like probably 5-6 billion years left. So I think that if we can live as long as Earth, I think that for human beings it's a great achievement. But I don't know. I mean, but it's likely that we cannot live that long.
You made a great point, you know, when you said that we're different because we have the abilities. We're not just in survival mode all the time. While that is a big part of our lives, and it's always the focus of our lives, it's not the entire part. And we can research and we can learn and we can invent and, you know, be innovative and make changes and think about things differently. And so, you know, we can maybe head off something like that happening. And I think that's kind of happening now.
Yes.
So what is the healthy, youthful living state, or you refer to HYL in your book?
That's a very interesting topic. So since this book is talking about rejuvenation and like how to live 300 years and beyond. So one that like in the first part of the book that was just like reveal, you know, like what our ancestors did and what's the like the popular concept of like longevity, you know, and also like things like, you know, like what do we want to achieve? We want to live a 300 year lifespan. However, like a crucial fact is that like based on all these analyses and discussion, it seems like that we cannot live 300 years just with our, you know, natural body or what's like what we have when we were born. So like to live that long, we have to get into another state of our body, I mean, with the help of, like, you know, technology and also like lifestyle and also mental health, with all that together and generate, to develop a different state, which is better and improved as for to live longer. And I call that state HYL, like healthy, useful, longevity state, right? So say that like people can live, are capable to live 300 years. So since it's a state of our life. It's similar to our current living state, but it's a little bit different because it's it's healthier, it's younger, and can live longer. So, I mean, in short, I call it HYL, so it's easier to talk in the book.
Okay. And so when you talk about living 300 years and beyond, it's more of a philosophic question than a reality, because who would really want to do that? I don't know of anybody that would really want to live that long. It's, you know, we get tired eventually of the lifestyle here on Earth. And would you ever want to live 300 years and beyond?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, personally, I really want to live 300 years and beyond. And I know some of my friends, including my working partner, that who really want to, like, live that long because we see the potential of technology. And after we do the research, we think that, like, it's achievable if we do it correctly. Although, well, I have talked with many of my friends who, like, ask, do they want to, like, live that long? And, you know, it depends. Some of my friends want to live that long, and some of my friends, they just want to have, like, you know, normal life. So it really depends. So when I write the book this book, the How to Rejuvenate and Live 300 Years and Beyond, it's a little bit different from other books talking about longevity. Is that, like, you know, the scope is so different. It's like 300 years, I think it's longer than the other, like, lifespan that people have been looking for so far. So that, like, in second part of the book, after we're talking about, you know, like, how to achieve it or the different tasks you have to be done to have a 300-year lifespan, is that like talking about like you mentioned, philosophical or sort of more practical, right? Like you want to live that long, right? What we will face if we have a 300-year lifespan, because like to live 300 years, it's not like, you know, you have a lifespan of that long. It's that you have to live through it day by day, like you mentioned. So many people may not like it. So in the second part of the book, we discuss a lot of topics related to different aspects of a 300-year living, like, you know, like your family, your friends, your jobs, and the society or the earth, right? So, I mean, this book is also about, it's also for me because I really want to live 300 years. So I want to know that like the different aspects of things that I may face. However, actually when I wrote the second part of the book, when I do all the research about those, I hesitated, I mean, many times about whether it's a good thing to live 300 years. One thing I talk about is, you know, like finance, right? I mean, you have to within 300 years. However, if you have a lifespan that is that long, you cannot retire at your 60s, right? And unfortunately, maybe you cannot retire at 200 years old. So, you know, like you need to work a lot longer than like the natural human life. And, you know, and also have a job and save money. So it's a huge burden if you choose to live that long. However, I mean, philosophically, it's a huge challenge, but it's also a huge opportunity. So in the end, I still choose that, like, you know, I will work hard on it.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. You kind of want to be around and see what happens. That's a scientific curiosity. but you know,
for sure.
Yeah, I don't know your age, but you're fairly young based on, you know, your picture from what I see. So you're not tired yet. You still got lots of hunger. Give it another 40 years and see if you still want to do it that long. But anyway, it is really interesting. So, okay. So one of the simplest and most common approaches to living a good life, a healthy life, is to have a healthy lifestyle. And that often includes eating healthy food. We would to think that. Now, as someone who does this, been doing this show for over 12 years and has talked to over 500 guests in that time, I've heard so many different approaches to healthy eating. And it can, you know, it really can make a person crazy, because what's healthy for one person may not be healthy for another. So how do you define healthy eating?
That is a very good question, because like you mentioned that there are so many different approaches, and like it could be a like all day long conversation and they're like arguing, and they're like, you know, we cannot reach an answer. I mean, for me, I think that like, you know, the definition of healthy food is like keep your like all your parameters in our like balanced state, so that in that state that you can sustain your life for very long. And also you don't, like, you are not eating something that's damaging your health. So I think it's a very simple or high-level definition, because it's so hard to find something that's really suitable for yourself. So in the book, I also talk about, like, healthy eating, because, like, one philosophy about eating is that you are what you eat, right? So if you eat healthy, you become healthier, and if you eat, like, not healthy, so probably become less healthier. There are definitely like very many like good healthy eating styles there. I mean, for example, one thing I think I talk about is the Okinawa diet. That's being like one of the Japanese islands that the islanders on have a like the average longest life expectancy of all countries at that time. So people think, well, you know, like maybe the Okinawa diet is the most healthy one. However, I mean, you were thinking about their lifestyle. Maybe you have to use local food and also like adapt a local lifestyle and probably live in the same locality. So with all those considerations, that making that eating healthy much harder than we expected. So, I mean, for now, I don't think there's a the world will have like comprehensive solution for that. But I would say that, like, you know, just like keeping a healthy diet and like also like enjoy yourself, right? Because food is not only about like to provide energy and the nutrition. It's also like be part of enjoying your life.
Right. You're right. And that was a great answer. Thank you. We're hearing a lot about artificial intelligence, AI, and I know that you talk about it in your book. This is becoming a huge topic for people. And you say in your book how they've tried to sort of copy the brain to transfer the mind and memory to reside in a computer or hard drive. And how does that work, or why doesn't it work?
Well, you know, like, there are so many ways of doing it, right? I mean, at a high level, like, right now, I think most of the people who study, like, neuroscientists and or study, like, AI, their approach is, like, using, like, computer systems trying to mimic the neuron transactions in our brain. And, like, if it's simulated, like, good enough, they would say that you probably mimic the function of a human brain, and using like the scanning of electrical signals, you can replicate the functions or probably memories of the brain. However, personally, I don't think that's really achievable, or it's not like cannot be like achieving a full extent that like everything our brain will be like copied. The reason is just like our brain is so complicated. So, like, you know, we have neurons have, like, 150 trillion neuron connections, right? This is, like, 75 times over the number of galaxies in the observed universe, right? And, like, they are transacting so many times per second. It's just so hard to, you know, even you can capture everything, you know, in our brain, it will only be an instinct, right? And then to replicate a function, it's our brain is keep on evolving. It's to me, it's just like so hard. I mean, if you are mimicking such a sophisticated system with a just like simplified model, I'm highly doubt that like can really be like copied, right? And another thing is that, so like in the book, I talk about different aspects of it. One way is that like you really like just like copying your brain and upload it to a computer or something. Or like it's like easier, you can like probably using some chip in your brain to like, you know, enhance its function, all those things. But like I'm still have a doubt in that, because right now, like the signals you can capture in our brain, it's so limited compared to like how many neuron transactions are happening every second, right? Like we said, there are like 150 trillion neuron connections. I don't think that even the fastest computer can capture all of them in a blink of eye, right? And then if your signal is like low res, how can you like replicate all the things? So, you know, like we know that like we can use AI to do some of the functions. Like, you know, you can use them to like open your garage door or like turn on the light or turn on your TV and listen to a song. Those are really cool. But how about things that are more complicated, right? I mean, I think people who are using smart technologies have experienced the time that, you know, like the AI is not really understanding you, right? If it's not being there, really there. So I think it's just like, well, maybe since if we can live really long, maybe you can see it, but right now, I don't think it's possible. So one example, in the book, it's like, you know, say that I have a thought. It's like, I want to have a double cheeseburger with crispy fried onion rings for lunch after this meeting. I don't think that any AI, by reading my brain, can get it right now, right? It could be something similar, but like all the flavor, when I was thinking about like cheeseburger, all the flavors, right, like all the memories about like cheeseburgers coming to my head and how I choose like, you know, the fries, I don't think they can replicate that. Yeah, so that's the reason why I'm thinking that like, you know, since we are, our body is still the only dwelling place of our spirit or soul or mind, probably we should like do better things with our body other than like think about, you know, like get rid of it and find a computer to live.
There's a Netflix documentary about what the future holds. And there's one segment where they talk about how death is going to be very different because we can sort of leave ourselves on a computer the way we want, and where
yep.
they will take the DNA and use it mm-hmm. to plant a tree. And that tree is you. And then there's a way where you can actually go and visit the tree of your loved ones, and it can talk to you. I mean, that was like, whoa, that is so amazing. But I can see how that could happen.
For sure, yeah.
As quickly as we're progressing. So you talk about the degradation of the body through certain systems. And can you give us a kind of a brief overview of how the system degrades and then maybe what would keep it from degrading?
I see. So actually there are like, our body are degrading from at different levels, right? If you look at a very microscopic, at the like the chemical level, right, the molecules that form our body, they get like wear and they get like damaged by just like living through day by day, right? I mean, they are just like small molecules and or like bigger molecules, but they are just like chemicals. They can damage like rubber or plastic you have at home, right? After use, they can get like not as good as when you bought them. So that's at the chemical level. And also at like a higher level, at a cellular or molecular cellular level, then your like different parts of a cell can also get like used because they have to get through metabolism and deal with like the things that are harmful to them and all the other like ways in the cell that accumulates over time. So those things happen at a microscopic level, right? So, and over time, it will affect your metabolism, affect the expression of your DNA. So there are one, it's a very recent publication, I think it's like 2 weeks ago, saying that, you know, like the reason why that people are aging, it could be that like the DNA cannot be expressed anymore because after so many years of using them, like the proteins that like label them are not as good as they were when we were like, say 10 or 20 years old. That's the reason why that some of the DNA that needs to be expressed and used are no longer be used when we're getting old. Those are things that happen at the chemical, molecular, or cellular level, right? If we look at more at like the bodies like, or our organs, right, can they also like get like used or wear, right? One example is our lung, like, right? We were like breathing and through it every day. It's like a filter. Like a car filter, right? But like you change your car filter every half a year, and it's really dirty. However, our lungs, we use it for our lifetime, but I mean, only a small population of people will like change their lungs, but for most people, we're using the same lungs. And the same lungs, they become dirty after a year. And for many of the cells that are like doing gas exchange, they just wear and damage and malfunction after years of use. It's very similar like a car, right? You have a, say, if a car is 10 year old, it's not as good as like when you bought it because of all the wear. But for cars, you can like change different parts and you like make, adjust things, make it right. However, to our body, the things we can do are so limited. That's the reason why, you know, like there are just so many damages accumulated over time. And it's a big thing that we have to deal with if we want to have a 300-year lifespan.
Okay, great. Thank you. You know, I would imagine that each of us would have to really research what is right for us, how we can live our best lives, because I would imagine it's different for everybody. And what made me think
for sure.
about that is modern medicine, because modern medicine
mm-hmm.
can kill us
mm-hmm.
and it can mask symptoms.
For sure.
And
yeah.
so for those who rely on modern medicine for everything, it's generally not going to have a great outcome. You know, I'm somebody that's, I've been doing holistic medicine for years and years and years. It's the only thing that works with me. And acupuncture, functional medicine, you know, just every kind of aspect of it. So how does modern medicine fit into this, if you have an opinion?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So, I mean, for modern medicine, it definitely helps. I mean, at least sometimes it helps, right? However, like you mentioned, there are also like many problems with modern medicine. We, for some of the like medicines that are targeting a simpler mechanism, actually it works pretty well. Like for example, some of the anti-fever drugs or anti-reflux drugs, the mechanism is very simple and those drugs are very effective. However, for some of the drugs that are targeting a bigger problem, they're not very effective because like human beings are so complicated, and once we have a more advanced disease or more complicated syndrome, it's usually you know, like multi-organ involvement, and also it's related to different parts of our body. In that case, that for modern medicine, usually it's only targeting one receptor, one protein, one target, whatever. It's hard to solve a problem that is so complicated, right? We all hope that complicated problems have a simple solution. However, it's not usually the case, especially when we are talking about like human body. So that's the reason why that, like, you know, sometimes you see that, especially for complicated disease, like modern medicine, you know, it can be doing well, especially in combination, but sometimes it's not working so well. So, you know, it's complicated. It can do what it's supposed to do, but doesn't mean that what it can do can solve your problem. And also, if you look at like current like clinical trials, since the system is so complicated, for those modern medicines to show their efficacy, their clinical trials was like designed so specifically that, you know, the inclusion criteria is so high. Only a small population of patients are really demonstrating the effectiveness. And also the effectiveness is only like usually like 5 to 10%. So that's the reason why, you know, like definitely that for people who works. It works well. But however, it's not, obviously it's not for everyone. And usually, I mean, unfortunately, sometimes you cannot solve the problem.
Right. You know, I recently went to a functional medicine doctor, and I was amazed at what he knew about the body that I had never heard of and never understood. And he traced my problems all the way back to childhood. He showed me the research. He showed me so many things to back up what he was saying. And I just found that really, really interesting. And so a lot of what we're walking around with, we've been carrying for quite a while. It's been existing in our body in some way, maybe wreaking havoc in our body some way. How do you feel about the COVID vaccines?
Well, I know that like vaccines is probably a pretty sensitive like topic, but personally, I had all my shots. I also have my boosters. So, you know, it's like in the early days of COVID, the death rate is like quite high. That's the reason why I say, well, you know, although I know that people worry about many things about vaccine, but comparably, it seems like the benefit is higher than the risk. That's the reason why I choose to do it. But like, oh, of course, different people have different opinions.
Okay.
And I want another interesting thing is that, like, you know, the book was like written COVID. Actually, many part of it is written before COVID. And in the book, I talk a lot about like RNA, how if you use RNA as vaccines and things like that. Mm-hmm. And it's before COVID, so nobody was really using RNA vaccines. But, you know, like during COVID, like billions of people have their shots of like RNA vaccines. So you see that, like, you know, like technology definitely has been changing. But like whether it's good for everyone, you know, remains to be seen. And like personal experience definitely will always differ.
What happens when we recode our RNA through these vaccines?
Well, I mean, actually, we are not recoding our RNA with the RNA vaccine. So for RNA vaccine, it's a different gene delivery system. So the one way is that you can deliver our DNA, and then the DNA transcript to RNA, and RNA translate to protein. Or if you deliver RNA directly, it can be translated to protein, and usually it's a part of the antigens that can boost your immune system. So that's a reason of using RNA, because it doesn't really get back to DNA in most of the cases, and it's just to generate the protein antigens that to trigger immunity. So it's not that you need to work. Well, I mean, it depends on the way that the delivery system works, that usually it won't affect your own DNA. However, in certain cases, if you are using some of the delivery system, RNA may be retransferred back to your DNA and just reside in your genome. It could happen, although the possibility is very low.
Okay, so that's so interesting. I'm just looking through your book here, and I came upon the game of stochasticity. What is that? Stochasticity. What is that?
Yep, stochasticity is actually another way to say randomness. So it's about this. Actually, it's a little bit philosophical. It's just saying now, life is a game of randomness, right? So even we have a 300-year lifespan, we won't be able to. Nobody can guarantee that you can live 300 years. It's even nowadays, with all the modern technology and other things and a healthy lifestyle, nobody can guarantee that you can live, or we can live 100 years, right? And it really depends. So it's however, when I use the game of stochasticity, I was talking about cancer, right? Cancer happens, unfortunately, but somebody never gets cancer and live 120, 130 years, but some people get cancer at very young age. But most of the parts is determined by randomness, because you don't know whether your DNA get mutated, whether a mutation is severe enough to cause cancer's changes and causing cancer. So that's the reason why I call it a game of randomness.
Mm. And you say with a long lifespan, even the most efficient DNA repair systems cannot prevent DNA mutations from accumulating and the cells from developing cancerous abnormalities. Why is that?
Yeah, so this is in the mechanism of cancer, right? So how cancer happens most of the time is that you have mutations in your DNA. However, we have a super long DNA, and the mutation, although they happen randomly, they're not always happen on your critical genes. They could be on a region that have no function or things like that. But also, we have a very sophisticated DNA repair system, so who can correct the errors and mutations. However, we just have so DNA, and also have so many cells that contain DNA. So every day, there is an estimation that we have 1 million mutations per day, right? So most of them are corrected. However, some of them are not corrected. And you were thinking probably you have every day you are accumulating one or two mutations per day. And then the accumulations will just the mutation will just accumulate over time. So there will be likely be one day that one of your critical genes were mutated. That's the reason why I say it's a game of randomness. It's stochastically that your critical gene is mutated. However, even your critical gene is mutated, doesn't mean that you will get cancer, right? It's mean that maybe the mutation is not critical enough to cause any changes in the cell. And unfortunately, some people, their mutation be affecting the cell. But even when they're affecting the cell, their cells have different mechanisms to correct it. And also they will have an immune system can kill the cells if they are not normal. However, there are still another game of randomness. Some cells can escape the checking system and become cancer cells. And however, even after that, like the cancer, a single cancer cell doesn't mean that it will become cancer, right? And because we still have bodyguards to protect us. However, unfortunately, some people, another game of randomness, that their cancer cells become cancer, right? Even though become cancer, some cancers are curable and some are not. So you see that everything was as a game changer. However, we're thinking about, since we're living longer and longer, the accumulation of like mutations become more and more. So that's the reason why that like in different textbooks like cancer biology, they usually say that like, you know, if you live long enough, you get cancer ultimately, right? This is based on statistically, imminently seems to happen. However, I mean, at an individual level, maybe we are the lucky one who never get cancer because all the mutations were either corrected or they never hit a critical gene. It all depends.
Very interesting. Thank you.
Yeah. However, I mean, another thing is that like, although from a human perspective, like, yeah, we if we live long enough, we'll get like cancer ultimately. However, in the book, we discuss about like how the different other animals, some of the other animals, they don't get cancer, right? So they are like, they have different mechanisms to protect them. Like for example, I think the sharks, for sharks, they have like more powerful DNA repair system than ours. So that they are more, effective. They have different multiple copies, so they have more checking proteins in their cells to protect them from DNA mutations. So that's the one thing that we can adapt with like gene delivery system or gene therapy, is that if we also have like multiple copies of guards, then our chance of getting cancer is much less. Like sharks that almost never get cancer, although there are a few cases reported. But usually, like most of them, they never hear of cancer at all.
Well, I guess they can't really pick up the phone and tell you. I know there's research. I know that 3D printing of organs is something that is, I don't know if they're doing it. I mean, if they're doing that, I don't know that doctors or surgeons are actually using these parts yet. I'm not really sure, but that does exist, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, actually, that's a very interesting field right now. But luckily, I have been friends with like some of the researchers in that field. I have like, heard about them, like they're making a 3D printed like lungs or 3D printed like hearts. However, I think, it's in developing, which is good, but I think it's still a little bit primitive because, like, you know, think about lungs and heart, they are so sophisticated, right? Even if you just like stick different cells in layers and put them together in a form of heart over lungs, doesn't mean that they are fully functional like that, right? So there are so many things that are microscopically that are like, you know, changing things. So it's not like at a cellular level, right? If I put a heart cell like next to another heart cell and then after another, they become a heart. They have all those like molecular level, like connections and signal pathways that make them like function together, right? So it's hard to build those things right now at a 3D printing level. However, I mean, in the future, maybe it's possible. You can see that right now, like for 3D printing, like skin or muscles, that's much more developed than like 3D printed organs. Yeah, so that's the reason why that people are using different approaches. Like, you know, some people have like mutated pigs or other animals and try to grow human organs in them. Although they also have like, you know, like immunity problems and other problems. But, you know, that's the reason why people are trying different approaches right now.
We are headed in such an interesting direction. I guess if, you know, 30 years ago you would have told us what society today, what we would be doing, how every child and every adult would be walking around with a phone that was a computer, that was a camera, that was a video recorder. I mean, we would have said that is impossible. So, you know, we really don't know what's coming. And I know there is a lot in the works, definitely a lot. Can we, change our DNA and genetic tendencies if we have this history that goes back that says, you know, everybody got this cancer or everybody had heart disease or there were mental illness or so forth and so on. Is there a way to alter the DNA?
For sure, yes. I think that, I mean, right now, like you mentioned, like 30 years ago, if we're talking about like how people nowadays live, I mean, people 30 years ago may not like leave it. And like, if you're talking with like people like, let's say 10 years about like, you know, mutate your genes and cure some disease, many of them won't believe it either. But right now, like, I think there in the world, there are like 200-300 clinical trials for gene therapies are like conducting right now. So there's so many people are starting to benefit from it, right? Although I would say that like gene therapy right now is not, well, it's good, but it's not like it's not like can cure everything, but certainly it helps a lot, especially for some genetic like rare diseases. For the diseases you mentioned, like cancer or something, some of them maybe can be cured by gene therapy, but some of them may not be like genetic disease that cannot like really help with what we have right now. But like, in the future, if we're have much more power and can really control our genes with gene delivery, and then I think everything is possible because they are like, basically it's like you have a computer and you have the administration account and you can like change all the settings by yourself. Then really you have total control of that computer, right? So yeah, really, I think that like if we have keep on this like the trend of development and in the next like 20, 30 years, I think a lot of things will become the reality.
Yes. So we want to be around to see it.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That's the reason why that, you know, like when I wrote the second part of the book, I think about like, there are so much burden about living a longer life. However, there are so many opportunities, right? So that's the reason why, you know, it's fascinating to live a much longer life and also like keep healthy and young at the same time.
Right. And that requires that we monitor our habits and make sure that they're healthy habits. What are some other things that we can do?
For sure. I mean, there are some like, so in the book, I have like 10 tasks about how to like rejuvenate and live a 300-year lifespan. And for the 10 tasks, there are like many things that like need the help of technology, but there are also like things that small things that we can do by ourselves. For example, like you mentioned, like keep a healthy lifestyle, and we'll also talk about like eating, right? Eating healthy foods, eat foods that like good for you. And also like other small things like avoid danger, like I mentioned, it's like, you know, just avoid like violence and other things that may harm yourself, it may kill you. Those things are also important, right? Also, like, keep updated with all the news and also, like, development of technology and other things that, like, may help you live longer. Like you mentioned, like, herbal medicine or other medicine that could be good for you. Those are also important, right? So keep you prepared once that, like, things are ready for you to live longer. I think that's very important.
Yeah, I found I've been using Chinese medicine for years and years and years, and amazing to me because they address things that Western medicine says cannot be addressed. I mean, it's truly amazing. I just think it's an incredible science.
Yeah.
What about
–
Go ahead.
Yeah. Since we're talking about Chinese medicine, so it's like – actually, it's very interesting, right? So although I was like – all my like – knowledge system is like based on medical medicine, but I do benefit from Chinese medicine, and also I know friends who like benefit from Chinese medicine, which is, well, I mean, it's hard to explain using like, you know, like the medical theories or something like that. So one of my friends who got like, it's like very severe kidney disease, and he like the doctor just told him like you cannot live like past a year because your kidney is damaging and probably will require dialysis and other things. But like, so he finds, since he has no cure from like modern medicine, he just turned to Chinese medicine to give it a try. And I think he now lives like 6-7 years. I mean, it's hard to explain how it happens, you know. And because like for Chinese medicine and many other like traditional medicine, they are using a complicated system to deal with complicated problems. So it's hard to sort it out what really works, right? But it doesn't mean that, but it cannot like deny the fact that it works. So that's the part. But for modern medicine, it's like we are using simplified system to solve like complicated problem, right? So once that we solve our problem, we know why and we know how to replicate it. So, you know, I think it's a different like system and a different way of thinking, but who knows? I mean, it's still very hard to explain using like, you know, current science for many of those like, you know, like results gained from Chinese medicine or other like traditional medicine, for sure.
Right. I mean, I know that through Chinese medicine addresses viruses, which is something that Western medicine is maybe just kind of beginning to deal with that. And I know of certain formulas that I keep on hand. Should I get a virus? Should I get a cold? Something like that. I know to take it immediately. And it completely gets rid of it. So there are ways to do this. Of course, you know, Chinese medicine is not the only way, but I just thought I would mention it. So the last thing I want to ask you as we wind down is mental illness is on the rise. And this is a particularly important topic for me because this is the field in which I work. So, so mental, we know that our minds are the influence for our bodies, right? So how do we keep our minds in a place where they are not wearing down our immune system, which is really what happens a lot of times?
That's a very good question. I think I'm not an expert in like mental illness, but I hear one thing called like placebo effect, right? The way that placebo effect is like once you have this like positive mindset or thinking that you're improving, your body responds, like I don't know like through what system, but like due to some of signaling, your body reacts and really work hard to become better. So, I mean, although I don't know much about like mental illness, but I think that keeping a positive mindset and live with it is really important.
Right. And what you said is very important because our bodies do tell us, our bodies talk to us. And I would venture to say that most people don't listen to their bodies. They just keep going, pushing forward, you know, pushing through it and everything like that. I think if we just listen to our bodies, they're going to tell us everything.
For sure, yes. Actually, I think this philosophy is very similar to Chinese medicine. So, like, you know, like in Chinese medicine, they don't think about like viruses and bacteria, whatever. They think about like, you know, if your body have a problem, that is your body has a problem. So you need to treat your body, right? So even if it's like, you know, it's a virus invasion or it's like your body is damaged, whatever. It's your body's problem. So, you know, just treat your body better. I think it's a philosophical, it's a different mindset, but it's really mind growing, right? It's like, you know, in the end, you have to deal with yourself. That's the most important part. And also for mental illness, I think it's the same thing, right? In the end, you have to deal with yourself. So how do you like know yourself better and treat yourself better? I think that's really important.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, you just touched on something super important because self-love is at the root of pretty much all mental illness healing. And if the person has that capacity to do it. And loving yourself, taking care of yourself is really the ultimate answer to a lot. So that's a very, very good point. So as we wind down, is there anything else that you wanted to talk about that I didn't question you on? I know there's so much more.
Not really. I think you cover a lot of topics and all of them are very detailed and it's a nice conversation.
Oh, good. I'm glad that you feel like we got everything. That's wonderful. Okay, so your book is How to Rejuvenate and Live 300 Years and Beyond, a systematic blueprint for living beyond the human lifespan. And this book is available through typical channels like Amazon. And where else can we get this?
Yeah, you can find it in like all the major bookstores or online, like Amazon and Barnes & Noble, like you mentioned.
Okay, that sounds great. And do you have a website or that you publish articles or blogs on or anything like that?
Yeah, there's a website for this book, which is by 300yearold.org.
Okay. And is there more than just the book on that site, or do you publish articles there, or is it basically just about the book?
Right now, it's basically just about the book.
Okay. All right. That's fine. No problem. I know you're busy in the labs and in researching and doing all kinds of things, studying this. So you're not sitting around like I am. Publishing articles and blogs. I probably have more time to do that. But anyway, it's been really fun talking to you, Muju, and I thank you for being my guest today and giving us this insight. For those who are listening who really do want to have that longevity, I have it in my family. Most of my family lives well into their 90s and maybe hundreds.
Nice.
So, yeah, I have it in my family, so I guess I'll be around for a while unless there's a different plan for me. But it's been really great talking to you. Thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you so much for having me again.
You're very welcome. Have a great day. Take care.
You too. Take care.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So we are out of time today, but if you have any comments or questions about today's show, you can email me at loveyourlife@randyfine.com. Actually, I keep saying that because you know what? I say that in my sleep. One time, my husband told me I talked in my sleep, and I said my whole beginning or end of the show because I've been doing it for so long. I want to correct that email address because it's randy@randyfine.com. So much easier, randy@randyfine.com. If you haven't already visited my website, randyfine.com, please do and become a subscriber. I recently had it redone. It's very easy to navigate. It's very interactive. There are hundreds of great articles, mainly focused on mental health. There's some other things, but mainly focused on mental health. And you could spend a little while there. And if you are suffering any issues around narcissism, codependency, letting go of the past, anything like that, that's the work that I do one-on-one with people. So thank you for listening today. It's been a pleasure. May joy and serenity always be yours.
We hope you enjoyed today's show. Visit randyfine.com, RANDIFINE.com, and be sure to sign up to receive updates on the latest blog posts, events, and upcoming shows. Thank you for listening.